Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're talking pet debt, job hopping, and Goldilocks cash.
Of course, everyone knows that on our Friday flights, we cover the top stories from this past week. That is, in fact, what we're going to do. The stories that we think you need to be paying attention to, because they are going to directly impact your finances. Joel, before we get to those stories, I wanted to share a quick little DIY bike repair win. I've got a confession to make, which is I have not been taking care of my bike very well.
Sing an Usher song.
No, I say that for Emily.
Okay.
That's how you serenade her, right?
That's right.
For the past few months, like, my bike's been making weird noises. It's been clicking. It hasn't been shifting properly. And specifically,
at least it's not growling. That'd be really disconcerting.
The final straw was that it got to where on my front brake, I would squeeze it pretty hard and it would make this loud popping sound, like this click. And I would lose my brake, like my braking power would diminish significantly. And so this past weekend,
that's a really important part of your bike.
That's a major one, right? Like, that's not the one you can ignore. And so I thought, dang it, what the heck? Okay, so I had some time this past weekend, focused on the bike, adjusting the derailleur, setting the upper lower limits or whatever. No, that's not that big of a deal. But the brakes, I guess in my biking history, I've never really dealt with disc brakes all that often. And I'm trying to figure this out. It seems kind of complicated. And honestly, it looked like it was broken. Like, I'd squeeze the lever and I squeeze the handle and the little lever that gets pulled that squeezes the brake pads onto the disc, it would like pop. It would look like, honestly, that it would dislocate. And I thought, of course, I've got to now drop, I don't know, like $100 on some fancy disc brakes or something like that. It's going to be a huge pain in the butt. Plus the time, of course. But before I did that, I thought, let me see if I can enter my symptoms within the old YouTube. See if anybody else has dealt with the same
problem. Kind of like WebMD for bikes.
For WebMD for like anything,
yeah.
That's broken in my house. But dude, seriously, within 5 minutes, I had not only identified what was going on, but how to fix it. In the comments, like the first comment, someone had responded and they said, hey, I actually made a video on how it is that you can fix this problem.
Nice.
Hopped over there. Literally, it only required me taking an Allen wrench. And so it's the brake pad on the other side of the disc. It had just worn down. And so you squeeze the one piston and it pushes the disc over, and it had to travel all the way across. And evidently that little arm, it's not made to travel that far. And so you literally just unscrew this brake pad adjuster on the other side. It centers the disc, and now my braking power is back to full strength. And it literally took, it's like a 5 second adjustment. I was just like, zoop, just turned it and I'm good to go.
Man, so many things in life are actually not nearly as hard as we built them up to be.
And it's just because you don't know what it is to do, right? It's like almost like a fear of the unknown, where you're just like, I mean, I was dreading the worst. I'm like, ugh, I'm going to have to just total my bike and just buy a, just buy a brand new bike. Immediately went to a worst case scenario, but yeah, that's not the case.
We're just so lucky to live in the era of YouTube. Granted, yes, it can be an attention suck if you're watching the wrong stuff and you're watching it too much, but man, there really are solutions to so many problems, external problems, not the internal ones take different kinds of work, I think, but yeah, so many problems, including fix it kind of stuff around the house, on your bike, your car, whatever. So
that's why I wanted to share this.
Use it to your advantage.
To encourage folks, instead of thinking, okay, we got to hire somebody, just spend a few minutes searching YouTube, searching Google, seeing if you can find something. And
might find that 30 minutes and just a little bit of elbow grease gets you done.
And it can not only save you money now, but it's the, like, I know this now for the rest of my life. Yeah. Like, anytime I've got a disc brake that's set up with a single piston, whatever, I learned some of these terms. I don't know it exactly, but I know that the other side, you have to occasionally adjust it out. So it keeps the rotor centered. That way, it makes so much sense too. Because I remember looking down and I'm like, why is my actual rotor flexing a little bit? Because, like, when I squeeze it, did it always do that? I don't know. But guess what? Doesn't do that anymore. I will never have that problem again, nor will any of the bikes in our household. And hopefully you can take this lesson and apply it to different fixes within the things that you manage, the different things that we have to maintain.
Since you're talking about biking
in our households,
just for a second, I want to say gas prices have gone up significantly in the past couple of months. It seems like I swear I was shocked the last time I went to the gas station. I feel like they've gone up 45, 50 cents a gallon. And so now's the perfect time to get your bike in shape, get back on it. As gas prices go up, they impact your wallet more and more. Every ride you take on your bike cuts down on your gas consumption. It keeps your car in better shape.
Not to mention now, this is the best time of year to start considering biking again too. As the temperatures are starting to cool down, literally a couple days ago, it was the first ride so far since, it's not technically post-summer yet. It's still going to get hot, I'm sure. But I started riding and I thought, ooh, it's a little chilly this morning. I mean, granted, it was like 6 in the morning or whatever, but I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yes.
This is great.
Yep, it is that right time. And it's not snowing in Minnesota yet.
Not yet.
Probably next week, but
in Denver it will be snowing in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to the Friday flight, Matt. The sampling of stories we found interesting this week. Let's start by talking about a topic that we've gotten pushback on every time we discuss this, and it's how much people spend on pets. And it's not because you and I don't like goldfish or hamsters or puppy dogs. We're totally fine with all the above.
I love a new puppy that I get to pet for 2 minutes.
As long as I don't have to keep
it. On the sidewalk.
I mean, someday I think we would love to have a dog in our family, but not right now. Not right now.
Yeah, we are not at that point.
But a new survey revealed that 78% of Americans say that they're willing to go into debt for their pet. And I'm sure everyone can guess what we think of that. It's a bad idea, right? Do not go into debt for your pet. It's great that you love your cat.
It's like a Dr. Seuss story.
Yeah, debt for your pet.
Stop! You must not go into debt for your pet.
It rhymes too. Yeah, exactly. But even if you love the hamster, like, if you can resuscitate it yourself, that's fine. But, like, don't pay, right, a vet to thousands of dollars to do that for you. We just don't want you to screw up your finances because of your attachment, your affinity for the four-legged creature in your house. And we've just, like I said, we've talked smack about how much more Americans are spending on their animals these days. It's skyrocketed, really, in recent years. And it's not that it's not okay to spend more if that brings you joy, right? And you've budgeted for that purpose. Mm-hmm. But that's the key, having and allocating money for that purpose, right? Putting pet care expenses on a credit card, though, that you can't pay off in full and on time at the end of the month, that is what's a bad idea. And for some reason, more than 3/4 of people say, no, it's fine when it comes to my pet. I don't mind sticking on a credit card, and I get the impulse, but it's far better to prepare in advance, to be saving up instead, so that you're not put in that position.
Exactly. And again, if your pet is your craft beer equivalent, I am fine with you spending lavishly on your pet. We just want you to go into that purchase, you know, when you adopt or buy a pet, with your eyes wide open. And you need to do it, like, as an adult. You need to be prepared for some of those additional costs that accompany, some of those hidden costs that accompany being a pet owner.
That means a line item in your budget and additional savings on hand to take care of even those unfortunate instances that might come along.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So some folks might think that pet insurance policies, that those might be the solution for some of those unforeseen accidents, or just the inevitable shots and visits that take place when you just have a cat or a dog. But pet insurance is not the solution. And to state it plainly, they are bad financial products. When you think about the, so not only are the premiums skyrocketing, there have been stories written about that recently. The deductibles are pretty high, but then you've also got the limits on the different policy payouts. Like, you consider all of that, you're going to be better off self-insuring. And so you just would take what you would have paid in premiums and instead just funnel that into your high-yield savings account. Again, create an itemized bucket, a sinking fund. A lot of folks end up making the purchase in order just to gain some peace of mind. And given the current state of that market, we want folks to completely avoid it altogether.
Yeah, Matt, and the way you just said it, it kind of sounds like a one-size-fits-all solution. And that might be a slight oversimplification, but it's pretty darn directionally accurate that pet insurance policies,
for the majority of folks,
for most people, it is throwing away money. Instead of those, if you've seen your premiums go up quite a bit, a lot of those policies allow for up to 20% increases every single year. And a lot of people have felt that, like have actually gotten price increases that large for years and years in a row.
And even beyond that, yeah. Is it the journal that documented certain insurers who have, even though they stated
that contract.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't, there doesn't seem to be any consequences or any retaliation.
Yeah, no repercussions.
Yeah, that's the better word.
Yeah, the only repercussion is that you then say, okay, I don't want this piece of junk. I'm going to start saving for myself. I don't need your overpriced insurance policy anymore. And that's how they're going to feel it. They're going to have to be competitive for your money and offer a better product. And a lot of these pet insurance policies, they're bad products. Let's talk about another kind of insurance though, Matt, that more people are flocking to that also might not be a great deal. And that is travel insurance. There's probably a little more nuance on this one than there is pet insurance. The Wall Street Journal wrote about travel insurance this past week and how different providers have been crushing it recently. They're making a lot of money. But as a lot more people buy these products, it's lining their pockets, but at the expense of yours. And so whether it's because folks are worrying about, you know, bad storms or even the lingering impact that COVID is having on travel plans, that's kind of what's pushing them in that direction. And honestly, it's not too expensive either, right? For someone who's younger and healthier, that travel insurance policy isn't going to be crazy nasty expensive. It can potentially work out financially, but just because it seems affordable, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a smart move, because there can be a lot of exclusions in these policies, similar to pet insurance. You got to read the fine print in order to decide if it's going to make sense for you. For instance, you might be worried about bad weather, but that insurance isn't going to save the day if your flight isn't actually canceled, right? Or if you're concerned about getting sick, well, it better not be because of a pre-existing condition, because that's not going to be covered either. You have to know that going into it before you click purchase.
That's true. Yeah. So it's not that travel insurance is a scam. You just need to know, again, what the fine print is of the plan that you're considering. And often there are just better ways of achieving that peace of mind than going with trip insurance. You could go to a website like Insure My Trip, and that'll allow you to shop the open market in hopes of saving on some travel insurance. But getting it through your credit card, that is almost always a better idea than buying a separate standalone policy. The Chase Sapphire Preferred Card, for instance, that is a great card to get for that specific purpose. It's got up to $10,000 in trip cancellation coverage per person, up to $20,000 per trip. That's a really nice sounding expensive vacation.
I've never taken a vacation anywhere close to that.
That is so much money.
That costly, yeah.
But your trip, it doesn't even need to be canceled before some of these different benefits kick in. That, again, this is just one card. I'm just highlighting some of the benefits that the preferred card offers. So for instance, you get $500 per ticket for a delay of more than 12 hours. This is awesome. Of course, you know, you need to make sure that you're handling your credit card properly. Anytime we talk about the different benefits that credit cards are offering, we always state that, because if you are paying interest because you're not paying off your statement every single month, you're losing out.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter how many of the different benefits you take advantage of at sort of like gambling, actually, which we're going to talk about here later on. But the house always wins. The bank always wins if you are paying interest. But we do want to mention this, because this is one of those little known, or maybe, I don't know, little less often talked about benefits that credit cards offer. And we actually talked about some of the different unique benefits that credit cards offer back in episode 683. So if you haven't listened to that one, be sure to check it out. But bottom line, both, I mean, trip insurance and pet insurance, it's one of those things where it seems like the responsible thing to do. It is not like life insurance.
Right.
Auto insurance, homeowners. Like, these are things
renters insurance.
Yeah, these are things that are either required by law, or if the terrible thing were to happen, it would completely devastate your finances. That's not the case where the worst thing to happen is your trip gets canceled. Yeah, you're going to be out some money, or with a unexpected medical vet bill, yeah, it's going to hurt a little bit financially, but it's not going to significantly set you back. Slowly, these different insurance products have like crept their way into, like, oh, it's the smart, responsible adulting kind of thing to do.
There's a specialized insurance product for everything now.
Right.
For everything. And so when you buy anything online now, it's like, do you want to insure those jeans you just got? And you're like, what are you getting a hole in? I'm like, what are you talking about? It just feels like there's insurance for everything.
Yeah.
And it always feels like the right thing to protect your stuff. But there are easier...
It seems prudent.
Right. It seems like the smart adulting thing to do. You're like, I'm a grown up. I guess I'll insure that thing, right? And there are some things where insurance makes sense, but there are a lot of other areas where insurance makes very little sense. And I know it can be kind of hard to spot. And that's kind of why we want to talk through these things and say, well, here's all the things you have to pay attention to if you're buying those things. And actually, maybe there are better ways to skin the cat so that you still get some coverage, some solid coverage via your credit card, but you don't have to go out of pocket and buy an expensive policy that you're unlikely to need and that might not even cover the things you need it to cover.
Joel, how dare you say skin the cat when we're talking about pet insurance?
I know. That was wrong. Sorry. All right. Let's talk about transportation for a second. Carvana, which is kind of the mega online used car seller, they have a new tool that they just launched for tracking the value of your used car. And so they kind of want you to have the equivalent of a Zestimate for your ride. So should you hop over there, input your car's info, and see what it's worth? I don't know. Probably not. Who cares? Like, there's.
Did you look into it for your van?
No, I did. I did not actually punch him in. I should have done that. I am curious. What was your van worth?
A lot less than I thought. It was like $4,700.
Okay. So here's the thing. The reason Carvana is telling you that's what it's worth.
Of course.
If you go to KBB.com, yeah. I guarantee you.
At least two grand more.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably even more.
There's
than that.
No way that I would be able to find a van that's in the condition that mine is in with the miles that it has.
For
all,
that price.
All things considered. That would be a steal.
Yeah. Yes. There's no way.
Does not exist.
Exactly. And so this is what Carvana wants. They want to input it, and then they want to entice you into their ecosystem so that they can lowball you for your car and try to sell you on something nicer, right? They want you to upgrade. They want you to get cobwebbed into their orbit. And the reality is, you're not going to get top dollar if you do. You're going to get paid a lot more selling your car in other ways than you are, in all likelihood, selling directly to Carvana. Is it worth maybe seeing, if you're in the market to sell your car, what they'll pay you?
Yeah, I don't think it hurts.
No harm, no foul.
Yeah.
But at least check out multiple other forms of selling your car so you can see whether you can get paid more. Selling even directly to another human, it's harder to do than it ever has been before, but it doesn't mean it's not worth the time and energy. It often can be, because we're talking about thousands of dollars back in your pocket, Matt. If you sold your car, if you listed it for $8,000 tomorrow,
oh, it'd be gone.
It'd be gone.
Yeah.
And Carvana says, oh, we'll pay you $4,700. Like, just know that's how big the gap can be. You might even be able to sell yours for $10,000. So like that's what you have to take into consideration. Oh, yes, it's a hassle. It's easy to sell it directly to one of these online sites, biggest one being Carvana. But I'll do a whole lot better if I sell it myself.
Sure. Yeah. I love it from the standpoint that it provides you, it's an easy way to gather data, right? Yeah. Just like Zestimate. Like, it doesn't hurt to know and to have that data on hand and to be informed. For that reason, I love it. But I also hate it for all the reasons you said, right? They're trying to make it easy. And once you kind of get within their orbit, they've got their tentacles on you. Now you're thinking about your car. You start thinking, oh, if I took that much money plus maybe some more money I've got in the bank, oh, let's see what else Carvana has to offer.
And
like, what are they selling?
Carvana's going to tell you what else they have to offer because they want you to make an upgrade.
That temptation to buy is real. And the whole point of their business is just to make things easier, right? Like, so you said it's like harder than ever now to sell to another person. No. That's how we perceive it. It has remained the same, right?
Like,
it
has not. I don't think so, actually.
To buy or sell to a private owner?
I think because so many people are taking the easy way.
Oh, sure.
There's fewer vehicles out there for purchase directly from others, and there are fewer people looking in that way, too.
Sure. So the inventory or just the number of cars that are out there might be fewer. But it's not like there are more barriers than there used to be. It's just that has remained the same, and a company like Carvana has removed barriers, and they're like have grease the skids, man. Like, they are trying to just get you thinking in this direction. And, man, they want to offer me that $4,700 so that they can turn around and sell that thing for top dollar. But, hey, let's talk about jobs, too, because we've been talking about job hopping a lot over the last few years, I think ever since the pandemic really kicked in. But it has certainly allowed a lot of folks to massively increase their income in a hot labor market. a slew of individuals, they were able to crank up their earnings by seeking employment elsewhere. And while that's true, and the possibility for increasing your earnings is definitely still there, the gap has shrunk. It's not as guaranteed. Like before, literally just floating your resume out there, it's sort of like the opposite of the car market that Carvana
like
is offering.
And people yes, are like, yeah. You want 90? I'll give you 100. I'll give you 120. And like that, people were getting paid a whole lot more job hopping, especially like a year ago. Yeah.
Exactly. And so another downside, though, that was recently documented is that when you change jobs too many times, it can start to impact your future job prospects. I think it was something like 77% of hiring managers at different companies see that as the top concern when they are hiring for a new position. It costs them a ton of money to hire somebody new, and it's just a headache. You don't want to have to continue to, like, when you have attrition rates that high, it ends up costing your company, your business, your organization a lot of money, a lot of time that could be focused in other areas.
You don't want to hire someone who's going to stick around for 9 months. It's almost like going on Tinder after you've just, your fifth marriage has failed, and you're like, looking for the love of my life, and the person who is reading your profile, if they see that, they're going to say, okay, I don't know if this person's going to stick around either. Those past actions are going to influence how they perceive you in the present. And the same is true.
I think it's indicative.
If you've job hopped like once or twice in the past 5 years, that's one thing. But if you consistently job hop every 9 to 12 months for years on end, that is going to catch up with you eventually. And it's not in the best long-term interest of your career. It might be a short-term boost, but in the end, you could find that your options are limited moving forward.
That's right. Yeah. And like, it makes me think of like the Carvana example. Like, I don't think it, like, on one hand, it doesn't necessarily hurt to float your resume out there and see what different folks are offering and kind of keeping an eye on the market, but it could lead to dissatisfaction with the job that you currently have. Just like with the Carvana thing, if you think you might be tempted into perusing the site and seeing, oh man, these cars are more affordable than I thought they're going to be, I think the same thing can be true of your job as well. And it could lead to you thinking, you know what? Maybe I'm not happy with this job that I've had for 6 months. When in reality, man, what you have might be an incredible job that pays really well, but maybe you're not taking it as seriously as you could. But we've got more stories that we're going to get to. Actually, we're going to talk about gambling and how it may or may not be your ticket to wealth. We'll get to that story plus others right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality, plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, the Friday flight continues. There's a lot more money headlines we've got to cover on this episode before we peace out and get to the weekend. But of course, the thing we have to get to now is the ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from MarketWatch, and the title reads, I spent $10,000 renting a storage unit, but finally learned my lesson.
Sounds like this one had a happy ending.
I'm glad. I'm glad for the author that they finally realized the error of their ways. But this article highlights what a lot of folks need to do, and a persistent problem really in our society, which is that they're spending too much money on storage units, and then the solution is to pare back their possessions, right? More than 1 in 10 Americans currently rent at a storage facility at an average cost of something like $165 a month. Man, that's almost like $2,000 a year.
That's a huge bill.
That's a lot of money. And so they pay the bill regularly, yes, but they tend to forget about what they have in the storage unit. They're like, oh, yeah, I got to pay for this thing every single month, but I don't even remember what I've socked away in there. It's almost like a self-imposed tax that people have levied on themselves. And I just want people to think again, if you have stuff in storage, do you know what's in there? Is there a reason that it's in there? Could you potentially get rid of or sell a lot of that stuff and get rid of that monthly payment?
Yeah, so I think the author, he admitted that the stuff that was in his storage unit was actually worth much, much, much less than what he was actually paying every month to store, which is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's a very American sort of phenomenon.
Yeah, we need more space for all of our stuff. Storage units, it can make sense in the short term, right? Like if you are moving for a short period of time, perhaps, you know, you're moving to the city and you're going to have a small apartment, that kind of thing. But they're a terrible long-term solution. But the industry has been making money hand over fist, largely because we're just unable to control our purchases. And we've got to find somewhere else to keep all that excess stuff that we've accumulated over the years. I don't know, if you feel like we've put you on the hot seat, if you feel called out here, we're not sorry at all. And we hope that you use this as a kick in the butt to declutter, to save. You don't have to go full Marie Kondo on it.
And I was just about to call you Matt Marie Kondo.
Try to figure out what it is that brings you joy. But I think there is a way that you can just unemotionally look at some of your stuff and think, when was the last time I looked at this? When was the last time I touched this? The last time I wore this, right? Like, that's a great measure when it comes to clothes that you have. Have I worn this in the past 12 months? If not, I think you could get rid of it.
When you look at like the past decade plus of returns, people who have invested in these storage unit facilities have crushed, like way outpaced the S&P 500. And they may not like bandits largely because we're idiots, right? And so it's not that I want to see those investors get crushed, but I kind of do because I want Americans to do
it. Because it would be an indicator of the larger American public doing what's in their best interest.
Dialing back, getting rid of some of those recurring bills, selling some of their stuff, or just, getting rid of it in some way, form, or fashion. All right. Piggybacking that on that though, Matt, the Wall Street Journal had an interesting article touting the end of ultra cheap stuff, as they called it. And they were talking about how factories in Asia are having a tough time finding younger workers, and the results are likely to be more expensive goods over time for us here in the States. And I don't think of that as a bad thing either. Like, we had this race to the bottom, and it was largely factories in Asia that were producing the ultra cheap goods that we've been consuming here. Lower prices, they are a net good, but that has often come alongside compromised quality in recent years, right? We're buying stuff that is so cheap that it doesn't last. And so instead of letting price maybe drive our purchasing decisions, I think you and I, we would suggest to think more about value, right? Potentially buying something that's more expensive that's going to last for decades instead of months, that's still likely going to be a better option in most cases. So if we're talking about fewer complete piece of crap particle board products, if we're talking about less of the poorly made stuff coming over here from overseas, I don't see that as an issue.
Yeah, and that's not to say that you have to go out there and spend top dollar on your furniture pieces or anything like that. Look at Goodwill. Literally, the boys are back in daycare now. And I asked Kate after the first day that she had reclaimed, you know, where she's had like a solid 3 hours of being able to do whatever it is that she wanted. And I was like, what'd you do today? And she looked at me and I was just like, what's a Goodwill? Because the ability to find quality stuff secondhand at some place like Goodwill, well, that's just one of the solutions to not having a ton of money on hand or just not wanting to spend a ton on quality products.
Sure.
It doesn't mean you have to go out and buy the nicest thing at some high-end store.
Yeah, sometimes vintage, antique, donated sort of stuff is going to be more solidly built and it's going to cost you less money.
Okay, let's talk about gambling because sports betting, it's growing like gangbusters, specifically ESPN. They've now gotten into the industry. Personally, I don't really watch a whole lot of sports all that much, so I'm not likely going to be inundated with any commercials, although I am talking about it, so I'm sure my phone is listening, and I will now get the ads.
Your alma mater is, I believe, ranked preseason number one.
Number one this year? Hey, well, maybe I'll watch the championship match this year. But ESPN Bet, they're going to try to convince a lot of folks to start betting on games and different matches. Don't do it, though, because everyone knows that the house always wins. Again, it's one thing to, say, go to Vegas once a year or once every 5 years or something like that and just blow some money in some different casinos, right? It's a form of entertainment at the point, but
as
I think
as long as it's entertainment categories as entertainment money in your budget, it's fine.
It feels like something that can that's more managed though, as opposed to the more pernicious form of betting that's taking place in the palm of our hands via our smartphones. This kind of makes David Brooks this past week, he wrote about moral formation in the Atlantic, and like we have become atomized individuals. And I think this is a small example. Before, you had to go to a casino, and there are certain things keeping us from going back there, whether it's people see you there all the time and you don't want to necessarily become a regular at a casino. But when you can do it, when you're sitting on the toilet or when you're sitting at a stoplight and you make a bet, these are some of the ways where I feel like we are losing perhaps a little bit of our moral fiber, the ability to control our behavior and ultimately leading to the American people having less money on
hand. Well, and you say that, but I think part of it too is you and I are not necessarily against gambling from some sort of moral standpoint, from a religious bent or anything like that.
It's the form that it's taken is what I'm speaking to.
Yeah, exactly. Because I have played blackjack before. I find it to be enjoyable every now and again, every few years maybe. And honestly, it's probably been 6 or 7 years since I've been to a casino. So it's not necessarily about that, although it is for most people. It's going to be a waste of money, but it's the accessibility and how easy it's going to be for a lot of people to get into a lot of financial trouble. And a lot of that financial trouble is going to breed relationship trouble, personal trouble. And so I think it's best for a lot of people to avoid this. And these betting companies, FanDuel and ESPN Bet and the like, well, they're starting to get into other versions offering different kinds of gambling as well, more novelty. They're getting into parlay bets, which means you can, and I'm not an expert on this, but bet on multiple things at once. So instead of just betting on your team to win, maybe it's like betting on your team to win while also hitting at least 3 home runs in that game or something like that. And so the odds of winning are lower on those kinds of bets, but the payouts are higher. And because the gambling apps are making even more money on these types of bets. So I think these things are pulling a lot of people in, given kind of how much marketing is going on around them and all the like free money to come gamble on our app. And it's getting people hooked. And maybe that first win makes you feel like, all right, this is going to be great. This is going to be my new side hustle or something like that. But this is the kind of side hustle that's going to leave a whole lot of people broke. And I don't want to see people ruin their budget. But then, like I said, I think it's going to lead to even ruination on even deeper, more meaningful levels like family units. So we're, again, not against gambling from like the moral standpoint, but man, it's going to mess a lot of people up and we want to see people avoid it.
Yeah, the downstream detrimental effects are going to impact a lot of folks. And now let's talk about having too much cash, which... too much of a good thing, right? Like it's always...
If you do, maybe you should gamble it away. I don't know.
We don't want you to actually gamble it away. We do want you to invest it, though. So this is becoming more of a problem for folks because individuals are feeling content to keep their excess money in savings and within CDs. We are, of course, happy to see that you can make more in those different accounts these days because obviously savers are finally able to outpace inflation for the first time in a while. And so you might be wondering, like, well, just why not take the bird in the hand? Why not keep earning money month after month without any like real risk that comes with investing? Well, we definitely do want you to keep some cash on hand. We want you to, if we talked about self-insuring when it comes to your pets or with vacations earlier, it's important to make sure that you are accounting for some of the additional costs of the different things that you're buying.
That means liquid cash reserves.
Savings. And when it comes to having an emergency fund, a minimum of $2,467 is what we recommend. But truly, a full 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses is ideal. But beyond that, though, there's a chance that you could be too cash heavy to the detriment of your ability to build wealth over the long term. It's not that you're not earning enough in the here and now. You actually are. But over the long term, that money isn't compounding and it's not growing at a rate that we have seen historically within the stock market.
Yeah. Even though savings rates have gone up, they're still not as high as what you're going to get in the stock market over the next couple of decades in all likelihood, right? And so if you're saving for a bigger goal, let's say like that home down payment in the next couple of years, that is a good reason to have extra cash on hand, right? More than you otherwise would. But other than that, I mean, investing less and adding to your cash pile when you've got decades left on your investing time horizon, that is going to cost you money over time. And so, yeah, when you look at that, when you zoom out and you look at the historic returns of the stock market, it's clear that they're superior to even the rates you can get on savings right now that are guaranteed. And so, again, so nice to see savings accounts finally outpacing inflation, at least by a little bit, but still. You can't save your way to retirement. Really, you have to be investing your way to get there. You have to be stocking money away inside of income-producing assets. And so increased rates for savers, beautiful thing. It's just not going to be enough to get you where you want to go. You got to be investing too. So make sure you've got enough cash reserves like we talked about, but also make sure you're not sitting in so much cash that it's actually potentially hampering some of those future goals too.
Yeah. You want to have Goldilocks cash. Not right. Not too little, not too much.
That's right.
But before we wrap this Friday flight, a quick little newsletter shout out. So Tyler W., he referred the How to Money newsletter, which shows up in your inbox every Tuesday morning with helpful bits of personal finance news and information and to-dos and just mindset shifts that we think are going to help you along your way to financial freedom. But he forwarded the newsletter along to some friends who signed up. So Tyler W., thank you so much for that. And if you are not currently subscribed, you can head over to howtomoney.com/newsletter. You can learn more about it and sign up there.
Yeah. And if you refer the email newsletter, which is awesome, to all your friends who are going to want to sign up, you can even earn How to Money socks or a beer on us, which is kind of cool. So yeah, there are,
because that's our thing,
perks for referring our stuff. But that is our thing, beer and money, right? So that's going to do it, Matt, for this episode. We'll include links to some of the stuff that we mentioned up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, buddy. So until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.